Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Jasagonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is Bluewater coming to you from Prophecy Keepers Radio. For the Mysterious Ozarks in Booger County in Mid-America. And our guests, this is going to be the show for beginning the 14th of August, 2004, is Lee Standing Bear Moore of Monotaca Native American Indian Council. Is that correct, Lee? Did I get that right?
Monotaca American Indian Council.
Right, American Indian Council.
Thank you.
And I've been dying to get Elder Standing Bear on for an interview for quite some time, because I'm always really curious about the backgrounds of people, and because these elders mostly write about spiritual things, and you don't really get to know them unless you get a chance to meet them. So I thought, this is almost as good as getting to meet you. And I thought I'd give the folks a chance to kind of get an idea about who you are and where you're from and how you came to be a Cherokee, or, you know, were you raised one, or were you raised half in Cherokee society or half out. Or, I mean, me, I was raised white knowing that I was Cherokee. And I was raised with a mother who had a lot of Cherokee attitudes and didn't know it. And I have met literally hundreds of people, and I know there's tens of thousands of people, particularly Cherokees out there, because there are 5 to 7 million Cherokee descendants now, who are in the same position that I was in back in 1985, when a full-blood Indian man appeared to me in a dream and asked me when I was going to do something about my Cherokee genealogy, which was kind of a wake-up call. And so I'll stop talking and let Grandfather Standing Bear talk. And I apologize for referring you to you as Lee at the beginning of the conversation. That was a major protocol faux pas, and I won't do that again. So welcome to the show, Grandfather Standing Bear.
And thank you, and we are going to have a good time today.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My gracious, I have not spoke of myself in such a long time. You know, I even avoid looking in the mirror if I have to, you know. I was born at Bell Mission, and there is where I was raised for quite some time. My family went to California during the time of relocations, you know, and I was did not return back to East until I was quite up in my later teen years. My family decided that they wanted to come back, and I decided that I did not want to come, so they left me out there.
In California.
Yes, it's a point of the family moved away from me. And I was 13 when that happened. And it was a bad time, and it was a good time, because it required me to become an adult very quickly and go to work and such as that. I did live with relatives for a period of time there, but
Now, Bell Mission, is that in like a San Joaquin Valley?
It is further south of that, but the family wasn't doing good there at all. And the people there, I guess like they always have been, were very abusive. But at that time, I was only a little one when my uncle came and picked me up and took me back here to Arkansas, and said, one day you'll be coming here, and brought me to Hot Springs National Park and took me up on top of a big mountain and took me up a big overlook and tower and said, one day you will return. I never remembered those words. I never knew he ever spoke those words to me as I got older. But they returned again just before my family moved back here, and said it again. But again, when I reached adulthood, I didn't remember his comment, that he said that one day you would return to this place. Many years passed. I did a lot of hitchhiking as a young man, young boy, moving all over the country. First, I got trapped in the deserts of California, and met up with some wonderful, wonderful people around Bishop, California, the Paiute. Didn't know they were Paiute at the time. I just thought they were just people. And the old man took me to his house, and we stayed there for a long time out in the desert. And from there he sent me north to be with some cousins among the Shoshone. And then from there, they sent me to some other cousins, who Southern Ute, and did a lot of traveling around like that across the country for a long time. Later, I came to Arkansas to visit. I guess I was probably 20 or 19 or 20. And while here, I was caught by the United States federal government, that is, and they required that I take a journey to Vietnam. And so I spent time in the United States military going through all kinds of training, and eventually wound up in Southeast Asia, in Vietnam and Cambodia.
Cambodia.
After leaving the jungle there, I, of course, had survived with, not without scar, but I did survive. Of course, I'm talking here on the phone today. Many did not survive, and they still walk around on our streets to this day.
Yeah.
But after returning there, I decided that maybe school would be good for me. I didn't do very good at first. Things were too fast, too plastic for me. And so I didn't do exactly what I should have been doing. But eventually I did enter into school and had a good instructors and was able to graduate LaSalle University with a degree in business administration. But I really didn't like business. I really never did. I just didn't know what else to do. And so I eventually went back to school again, same place, LaSalle, and was able to acquire a degree in business law. And I didn't like business law either. Didn't know what else to do, though.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I did enter into the commercial industry, and more specifically into forms of marketing. I was able to learn from a man who did music concerts. And so I entered the music concert business and was able to produce a number of major concerts after many years of working with him. I had pledged my loyalty to Bill and McFadden, and from there I learned everything there was to know about performing, producing major concerts and so events. And so around the country I moved for many years, doing a concert here and a concert there. And it was in many respects a very enlightening time. It was a very confusing time at the same time, because that world was much different than anything I had known before. Much too harsh, much too fast. And in fact, did stay in that industry for a long, long time, many, many, many years, 20 years, I guess. And it afforded me, however, the opportunity to live where I wish. So, eventually, I made my way to Hot Springs and didn't know much about the city or anything, but it was beautiful. Many lakes around the city. It's a retirement area. It's a tourist area. And I love the mountains, of course, but at the same time I loved the lakes and all the rest of the remoteness of the beauty of the area. So this is where we have remained for the last 35 years. It wasn't until much later, after I had lived here for quite a long time, that awakening came within us, came within, and I began to realize, feel the energy of this place. It was during those long walks on the mountains that a certain peace came to our heart and compelled us to return back to the old ways. Back to the ways of our ancestors, you know. Those being, you say Katua, I like to say, or I say Katua.
Oh, Aniwea, I've got, you know, if you're Cherokee, you because traditionally you had to marry somebody of a different clan. All the clans intermarried, and everybody's got the same blood. You know, we've all got the blood of the Bear Clan, the Katua Clan, the Wolf Clan, and every other clan that there is. It's just that You know, while we live, we identify with one clan. That was our mother's clan.
There you are. But it it has been a wonderful, wonderful journey up to this point. Of course, Barry's married. I have been married now for, well, a long time.
But
we have a daughter who is works with disabled children, and she has been doing that for a long time. And then we have a younger daughter who lives here with us at the present time. She won't be here too much longer because this will be her last year in high school. And she is a very aggressive young lady and likes to, is hoping and planning, in fact, has been planning on college since she was in ninth grade. So she'll be leaving before long, and her mama will be empty in the nest. So we'll have to deal with that when it comes.
Yeah.
We live in a place where we don't have a lot here. I have not cared about earning money for many, many years. And so we don't have a lot here anymore. But that's okay. Creator provides every moment, every day. So
I know how that works, Heath. It's been a long road for me too, because he's been weaning me down to where for most of my life my parents provided for me, and then I went to college and I got my degree and I provided for my family, and but then he disabled me to a certain point, and so I had to start learning to depend on him more and more, and now he's literally retraining me now. It's like I was telling Ghost Wolf, he's training me now to instead of depending on him monthly, you know, he's cut me back to daily, that I'm having to guess, you know, what's going to happen next. And I told Ghost Wolf the other day, I said, you know what, and Ghost Wolf says, yeah, he's in the same position, and he says, it's scary, isn't it? I said, yeah, it is. I said, but yeah, I said I'm a lot more peaceful this time. The jump from where I was to depending on him monthly for income was a very hard one, I said, but this one is pretty easy, and so I think the jump from here to depending on him hourly and every minute would be a lot easier, and I think that's where he wants everybody, and I think that's the reason why, and I know on your website you talk about, people really waste their time worrying about the earth changes.
Yes.
And what Red Elk and I, keep preaching, even though, I've not fully internalized it yet, is that if you have a direct uplink and an association and you have Creator's voice, you really don't have anything to worry about.
Agreed. Yes, very much so.
Well, tell us about Manitoka. This place is absolutely a magical place. I didn't know anything about it until I got on your website a couple years ago, and I was absolutely astounded to hear about the Manitoka Stone. I wasn't surprised, because I knew from listening to cultural Cherokee teachers that we had associations in the past and had lived in Mexico, and some of the symbols on the stone looked very reminiscent of Mayan or Aztec symbols. So just tell us the story, would you, Grandpa?
The story of Manitoka is really not a story at all, really, because it is the truth. It is of our past. It is of our present, as we live it today, as we live here, and as we welcome so many thousands of people who come to pray and to do ceremony here. And it's of our future as well, because it will play a very, very, very important role in the next world. Manitoka has been that name for thousands of years. They say that the language that it is spoken in is not of anything familiar with the modern ethnologist and people who deal with languages. But we know that it is of Tula, T-U-L-A, origin. The Tula people lived in a place called Tanico, which is maybe 45 miles from here, in a place called Kadogat today. No one knows when the people of the land started coming to Manatanka, but they recognized very, very early, thousands of years ago, of the special qualities, of the special appointments that are given here. We don't know how many came from what directions, but we do know that the Hopi came from the southwest, made long journeys, crossed raging rivers, mountain sandstorms to get here.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
Audio. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
We know that the people of the north, the Potawatomi, the Seneca, Mohawk, Onondaga, they came as well. We know that the people of the plains, the Lakota, Dakota, Santee, Hung Papa, Brule, Oglala, all those people long before they ever got on the plains themselves, when they were still in the Ohio Valley. And when they were on the east. We know that the Paiute came, and the Ute, and the Shoshone, and the Cheyenne. We have evidence of that. There are many tribes today that have stories of Manataka, except they are crouched in their own tongue, in their own way, and they don't know it. Some, like for instance the Kaw or the Kansa people, had always held that Manataka was a mythical place because they had lost so much of their own tongue. The Cherokee came, we know that. We know that the Choctaw and the Chickasaw, their neighbors, came as well, Catawbas. Why did they come? That's the important thing to understand, though. You know, why? Why would any people travel such a tremendously long distance across through snowstorms, through hunger on the trail, long before the horse they came? We even know that the Maya of Guatemala and southern Mexico, they came 2,000 years ago or more. But why? Some tribes would come every 7 years, and some would come in more like 11 years, like the Maya did. But some would come more often, depending upon their own location, the distance, and their own customs. Some say, like the federal government, I have to smile. They have several names for Marataka at downtown and along what they call Bathhouse Road today. They have plaques. They say this area was known as Noisilan, and that means the breath of healing. But I say no. You have it incorrect, because it only referred to the waters, the hot waters, the healing waters that are here. So Noisilan was not the name of the place. It was what was here, one of the things that was here. And on something else, they say that this place was known as Tanico, because the Spanish explorers wrote that the place of Atula was where hot springs were coming up out of the ground. Well, actually, at Caro Gap or Tanico in those days, it was known that place also had hot springs and still does to this day, except they have moved out into the river, so we have hot springs coming up in the river. So how do we know that this place was known as Manataka? Well, because of the meaning of its name. The meaning of Marataka is the place of peace. That is what everyone referred to it, regardless of whatever they called it in their own tongue. They all referred to it as the place of peace. And they gathered here in great, great councils. The old men would come. The old women would come. And those people who would take care of them on the trail here, you know, 20, 30, 40 people. Not a big group of people, but it was very dangerous coming. So why would they come? And down at the National Park Service, the guys with the smoky bear hats on their heads, they would say, and they still say to this day in some of their writings and their talks, they say, well, Indian came here to bathe in the hot springs, to get the water. I say, I went to the superintendent years ago and I asked him, do you know that for sure? Is that true? He said, well, of course it's true, because everyone comes to hot springs to bathe in hot waters. I say, oh, okay. Well, let's play a game for a minute. Let's say, pretend that you are a Catawba and you live on the East Coast and you have an affliction and you need to come to Manataka to be healed. Would you walk 1,000 miles to take a bath? You know, you couldn't carry any water home, or not very much anyway. And besides, you'd need another bath by the time you got home. You know? I say, you know, and besides, Indian would not take it upon himself to come such a tremendous danger, a tremendous distance, and place his people, his own family, at such tremendous danger of ferocious animals, and sometimes even ferocious people. to come to Manitaka, not for that purpose of healing oneself. That would be too selfish. That would not be indicative of the thinking of American Indian, who always considered the community before himself. So I tell them, no, they did not come here just for the water. That was an added gift they received when they got here. There are some who say they came here because of the healing stones, you know, the crystals, and especially the Cherokee, I know, came for that special gift because they worked so much with the crystal in doing the healing. But there are many crystal places all across this entire wonderful country. They would not have to travel such a long distance for that. Some say they came here because of the herbs, because the herbs grow even to this day in a perfect circle, and they are so powerful. The varieties were so many, and the special qualities of the herbs of Manitaka are just beyond belief in their healing power. Some say that they came here because of the healing clay. Yeah, the clay. That's very interesting, the clay. Because, you know, if you have a chigger or a tick or a bee sting or a wasp sting or poison ivy, poison oak, or anything that invades the skin, all you have to do is put a little clay on it and let it dry. Put maybe like a cloth or a covering over it as it's drying. And then when you take it off, brush off the dried mud, there is no more bee sting, no more poison ivy. It's all gone. 15 minutes. Wonderful. Women used to eat it, though, especially when they were heavy with the baby. They would make it into little tiny balls, you know? And put many, many of these little balls inside of a pouch. And then throughout the day, well, not all the time during the day, but once in the morning and maybe once in the late afternoon, they would eat one of the clay balls. And it would make their birth process go much better. Less sickness, morning sickness, and the length of the labor would be much less. And the pain would be much less. It was because of the tremendously, the chemicals, and not the chemicals, but the minerals that are inside of the clay is exactly what they needed at that time. So they came for all those gifts. But then again, they came for none of them, because there are herbs in every place you could look in this entire world. Everything out there is good for medicine.
A lot of people don't. Excuse me for interrupting, but a lot of people don't know that the vast majority of the herbs that are marketed all over the world that come out of the United States are grown in Arkansas and Missouri in the Ozark and Plateau. And
it's because of our temperate climate and good rain, but not too harsh winter.
Right.
You know?
I
have often asked students who come here and who go down to the mountains and such, I say, I look at them and I point out to all the green as we overlook, you know, the earth, and we say, with what kind of plant out here, what kind of thing that is growing cannot be used as medicine? They look at me and someone says, well, how about poison ivy? And another one says, how about hemlock? I say, no, neither one of those. And then they'll continue to guessing for a while, and I'll just tell them, there is not one single plant, not one tree, not one herb, not one anything that grows that cannot be used as medicine. Everything that grows can be used. Then I ask, well, what stone cannot be used for medicine? The smart ones catch up quick. They say, none. I say, exactly right. Not one stone anywhere in the earth cannot be used as medicine to heal our bodies, heal our minds, heal our souls too. Isn't that amazing that the Creator would think, where do I put my children? Where do I put all the creatures of earth? I put them in a place where everything they touch is good to heal them. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Well, I know, and by the way, folks, if you can get on the internet at this point, Grandfather Standing Bear's website is at www.manasinnovemberatak.org, manataka.org. And we've been talking a little bit about herbs, and I don't even know if Grandfather knows about this or not, but the largest herbal mail-order supply house in the world is, I believe it's a Mountain Home. Their website is at herbalhealer.com.
Yes.
And you can actually take courses over a period of time, a little here, a little there, but you can become a board-certified naturopath through herbalhealer.com. It's a great website, and part of Arkansas and what's going on in Arkansas. I know my mother was born in Arkansas. I'm married to an Arkansan, and it's a really special place. They call it the natural state, and they do. And it certainly is true. It certainly is true.
I must correct you on one thing only, please, Blue Otter, is that the site is not theirs.
You bet.
It belongs to the hundreds and of Manataka members. It belongs to the Manataka American Indian Council. And I only serve to submit and to edit articles and things that come to us. And it is a place of learning for all people. It's a place of amusement, because we have fun there too. And we have the largest powwow calendar on the web today, I understand. I don't know that for a fact. I have heard that from several. But we have legends and beautiful poetry, and we talk about Medicine Lodge, both medicine from the Mother Earth and medicine of the Creator. Gosh, we talk about history and conservation and dance and education, and of course, there are many places on there where the elders speak, too. We have music and different things that, you know, bring learning to the people. Many, many, many books today are on the Manataka website. Between 2,000 and 2,500 actual pages if you were to print it out.
Yeah.
So.
A wonderful website.
And it's growing every day. It's growing.
You've done a tremendous, you or whoever's done it has done a tremendous job.
Well, we thank you very much. I guess I have to, say that I am responsible for any errors.
Me too.
I am responsible for any kind of problems that it has. And it's a labor of love, though.
They really are labors of love.
Yes, it brings a lot of questions to people's minds, and that's what we're after. We're after them to question where they are, where they're going, and to help them in that process of walking that road, whatever path that they choose. It's an exciting thing. Learning should always be free. Always should be free. Teaching should be free. And it is at Manataka, anyway. I don't know. We like doing weddings. We do many weddings at Manataka. And most of the stories, in fact, about Manataka are not about what the fantastic things that happened here in history. But there are love stories, most of them, about Manataka. that I have found throughout the nations across the country about love. Because sometimes when people would come here from the north, or they come from the south or the east or the west, whatever, they would meet someone that they would fall in love with. And they would tell their people, you go on back home. We're going to stay here. We're going to become a keeper of Manatanka. And we're going to become married here. And so they were. This was a great melting pot, if you will. I like telling the love stories as much as I like telling the spiritual and the other stories about Manatanka, the historical side of it. But that question is in a lot of people's minds. What would prompt anybody? Well, you can say, well, it was a spiritual place, you know? Well, yes, it was, but every nation had its own sacred places, their own special places that they would go. So why would they travel such a long distance to come to a sacred place that was shared by many? That question is yet to be answered by those academics, those government bureaucrats and people like that. They still don't know. Some even deny that the tribes even came here in an effort to discount the importance of this sacred site.
Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Because it was not indigenous, it was not a site that was just held sacred by one tribe. It was one that was held sacred by many, many, many tribes across the entire continent and beyond. So why? Why did they come? That's the big question. Not to pick up the gifts on the ground, that they could have had something similar to it in their own places, not maybe not as powerful, but certainly needed, like the healing herbs and the healing stones and the healing clay and the healing water. That's a big question, isn't it? But not in my mind, because I began to learn that way a long time ago, several decades ago. I learned from listening to the trees and listening to the water, and I listened to the voices that can be found even to this day floating, you know, among all the ancient things of Mana Tanka. I denied it for many years. I would not listen, and I refused to accept what was here. But I'm happy, very happy to report that in the last decade anyway, the people have started to come again. Some very privately, some without notice, some without any kind of fanfare. They come and they go up on the mountain and then they perform their own ceremony and do prayer. They do a pilgrimage, if you will, to Mana Tanka. Others come during gatherings, big gatherings that we have. Some take the time to let us know that they're here and ask that we meet with them down near the river, down near the creek, and to pray with them. And that's good. We're always happy to meet with the people. There are more than just Bear here now, though, because others have come to join us. People from far away, like Wo Ablaisa, Robert Labatt, of the Lakota, travels around the country doing ceremonies for the people. He has been coming here for many, many years. There are others among the Lakota who have come here as well. Peter Katches, or Katches the Enemy, who's done for, 26 years, the Spotted Eagle Sundance.
Pete Sr.?
He has passed away.
Yeah.
He has been gone for quite a number of years.
He's one of Ghost Wolf's teachers.
But Peter Katches has been here to Mana Tanka, and we stay in contact in different ways through different people.
His son.
And I can go on with a list, the Maya, daykeeper. I cannot pronounce his Maya name, it's too long.
Unbatsman?
The Omi Ikalata something something.
John Francisco. Yeah. Yeah.
I cannot pronounce his name properly.
Don Alejandro.
I don't know. But he has been here once every 7 years. As is their way. But I don't know. There have been many chiefs that have come of different tribes, privately, quietly. And then others have appeared publicly during the gatherings themselves. But what is it that's here? What would compel the people to come? That's the important question. Very important question. I can tell you what the first white Europeans saw when they came here. Don't know if that's any interest, because it happened such a long time ago. 1542, I believe it was. I wasn't here then.
That you remember, at least.
Yes. But it was, people called themselves conquistadors. And they were in search of something that was more valuable than gold. They were in search of something that was a lot more valuable than silver. They had spent many years in the island nations of what is today known as Cuba, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, you know. And they had spent a great deal of time torturing the people there, the Tejano people. And they were looking for the gold, but the people down there didn't know anything about any gold. And they soon learned that the people of the southeast, in Florida and Georgia and in through that area, Louisiana, when they would mount expeditions to those areas, those people didn't know anything about gold and silver too. It wasn't important to them. But they did learn about one thing. At least they thought that they could find it. And that was something that Ponce de Leon spent his life trying to execute.
Aha, the meat of the matter.
Yes, he was looking for that fountain. He was looking for the fountain of youth. More valuable than gold or silver. More valuable than anything in the world. And he mounted expeditions that failed. But his predecessor, a man by the name, but the man who followed him.
Cabeza de Vaca, or?
His name was Hernando.
Oh, De Soto.
De Soto. If you look at a map of De Soto's travels as he came into this continent, it reminds me of a sniffing dog looking for the scent. He crisscrosses back and forth, looking. I mean, the way he runs is just like in an S, you know?
Yep.
And this is the way his map looks as his travels were documented. And Hernando de Soto and his conquistadors came within about 40 miles of Minnetonka to the south of us and went to a place today known as Caddo Gap, and they ran into a people called the Tula, and they abused the Tula people. And as a result, there was a war that began between them. And the first day, many Indians lost their lives. They had never seen armor or horses before, and they didn't know what to do. And then the second day, the Indian took the advantage. The Tula people used the terrain, used hit-and-run tactics, and was able to take the advantage away from the conquistadors on the second day, and they killed many horses and many men. And then, on the third day, the Tula men realized that they were fighting the people of the prophecies, that they were in the face of those people, and they turned their backs on them and left the battle. And then they had their women come in and finish it. It was the only place in all of the conquistadors' travels, north and south continents, where the conquistadors made a perfect U-turn and ran. And it was the Tula women who turned them. They demoralized the conquistadors. As they ran away, they did not follow the same track as they did coming in. They followed the area of least physical resistance down the Ouachita River Valley. They came. And 40 miles, 45 miles later, they came to a group of mountains. And we call them Three Sisters. The National Park people, they call them something else. But they came to the place of the Three Sisters. And they mounted one of the mountains in the middle, and then they looked down and they saw a sight that was indescribable almost to them. Many years later, they did write it down in their chronicles, what they had seen. But they wrote, and I paraphrase, they wrote, as far as the eye could see, there were teepees and wigwams and wikiups and hogans and a longhouse and cabins as well. They wrote that as they looked off into the valley, they saw hundreds of people in different kinds of regalia. And they all spoke a different kind of language. Everyone was speaking different languages. But the one thing that they saw made them want to run back and tell Hernando de Soto immediately was the fact that not one individual in the valley below was carrying a weapon of any kind. There were no bows, no arrows. There were no lances, no tomahawks, no knives. Nothing did they carry. Yes, they had those things in the camps, you know, for hunting and such while they were here and on the long trip coming and going. But in the valley of Maratanka, not one person was armed, even though they may be standing right next to a group of their enemies, long-time enemies. They never would carry a weapon, not in the valley.
I've heard of places in Utah like that where, and in southern Colorado that were like that.
Yes.
Were sacred places.
You know, and you know, the National Park Service today, they like to call this place a neutral ground. Neutral ground for American Indian because they did not fight here. Well, it wasn't neutral ground. It was sacred ground. They refrained from saying those words. That is the reason why they weren't armed, is because it wasn't just neutral ground. That would not be enough to hold anybody from fighting if they wanted to. But it was sacred ground, and all nations respected that.
It was their honor that kept them from fighting.
The scouts ran back to Hernando de Soto, and he quickly put together gifts. And he came riding in to Manitanka. By the time he had got here, though, a lot of the tribes had disappeared. They drifted off. And that night, their first night here, the rest of them drifted off. But he was able to take two or three captures and keep them here during the time he was here, about a month and a half. Month and a half he stayed in the valley, the longest he had ever tarried in any one place. And he began searching methodically, every inch, every cranny, every cove. He began looking for the crystal fountain where it had the healing waters, the fountain of youth. And he searched and he searched and he searched. After a month and a half of being here, De Soto left the protection of the valley and he went on an excursion outside the valley near a place that today we call it Hell's Half Acre. It's a place where nothing grows, not one blade of grass, no weeds grow there, no trees. No birds fly over it, no bugs crawl across it. No animals will run across it either. It is a place that looks like a millions of years ago came a tremendous upheaval. But nothing at all grows there. We recently had an airplane who made the mistake of bragging that he would fly over it. And he crashed and died in a small one engine. There are many stories about that place, but he made the mistake of wandering outside the valley, outside the protection, the circle. And when he did, Hernando de Soto became very sick, extremely sick. And so immediately they left the area and they began a trek back east. And before they got to the Mississippi River, Hernando de Soto died of the sickness. That's what the first white people saw when they came here. But our people saw something completely different.
Of course,
they always
did. The second group of white people that came saw dollar signs, right?
You know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, for as long as the Spanish held this continent in the south prior to the French and the treaties between the French and they never did come back to Manitanka. The Spanish never came back.
Yeah.
Not in any literature that it can be found by historians and all of that. They didn't want any part of Manitanka.
Yeah.
But our people, they had a different idea of what this place should be. And in fact, they would ask each other on the way here, they would say, you know, just like little kids today say, when are we going to be there?
Yep.
They would say such things as, when are we going to be there? And the old ones who had been before, they would say, when we see the sign in the sky. When we see the sign in the sky. Well, if you look up around here now, you can't see no sign in the sky. What was that? Just some kind of an Indian myth or what? No. They were telling the truth. It was a sign in the sky that they would know Manitanka by. You see, as they came closer to Manitanka, what would happen is the Mother Earth itself would make the sign. The Earth would provide the hot waters. And together with the hot waters, they would run into, well, over 100 cold water springs are found here, too. In just the small valleys, you know. And as they've combined, the two would make tremendous vapors. The mist that would cover the entire valley so thick that sometimes you could not see your hand.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
So many hot water springs, bubbling, bubbling, and then hitting the air would create more. steam. The French later called it the Valley of the Vapors. And the vapors would come up each morning as the sun rose. And at first they would be laying like a white blanket on the ground, very thick, 2, 3, 4 feet high. But then as the day came, the clouds on the ground would begin to rise, and they would form a ring around Matatanka. The clouds would go and lay on top of the mountains. And then, as the sun came, out of that cloud would jump, leap, the most beautiful, tremendously beautiful rainbow that you've ever seen in your life. And as the stories say, the rainbows of Matatanka were not like any other on earth, because they were not against the horizon. The rainbow would go from cloud to cloud up above Matatanka. And as the sun came even further in the day, the rainbows would turn, you know? And as the sun continued its drift across the sky, the rainbows would continue to turn. So every inch of ground under the rainbow would be touched at Matatanka.
That's incredible.
Yes. And all of the second thing
rainbows
they would see as they came, the second thing they would see, as they would come over a hill or around a bend, then they would see another rainbow, and then another one, and another one, and another one. And when they got way down into the valley where the springs were at, there would be little baby rainbows everywhere. And the growth here was tremendous. It was like a hothouse.
Oh, yeah.
A tropical place in the middle. Because of so much water, so many hot water, so many cold waters, that the plants would grow huge, very big, and the flowers were most beautiful here. And the trees would grow tall and strong. And the colors was magnificent as you walk down the valley, because the stones themselves turned many, many colors. Blues and pinks and purples and greens of all descriptions.
From all the lichens and mosses.
Yes. As the vapors would arise every day, would heavy with the minerals of the earth, and then at night they would come back down and settle on the stones, and particularly on the mosses, and it changed the mosses' colors. There's no more of those colors left today, except one moss that lives inside the water. It's the only place in the world where it is found. It's here, a very deep, deep green. But all of that is gone now, you know, and that's another story to be told as well. But that's what our great-grandfathers saw when they came here in the mornings. Oh, my, blue otter. In the mornings was the most special of all time. The people would come here, and they would not wear shoes. They would pull their shoes off and walk barefooted. And as they looked over into the valley as they came from their various camps surrounding Matatanka, they would walk into the valley, and they would see a beautiful white blanket that had been laid down on the ground before them. And as they would begin walking in their bare feet, they would put down each foot very, very softly, very quietly, and very, very deliberately. Because, you see, they felt that they were walking on the very heart of the Mother Earth. They felt like, at the same time, they were walking in the clouds. Ah, it was a place of tremendous, that is
unspeakable. I could just, there must have been a place of absolutely unspeakable beauty.
And
those rainbows are creator sign. I know at Oahu Falls in Kentucky was another very sacred place. They had moon boats at night. They had night rainbows.
Yes, yes.
And the creator, at a certain time of year, the creator would extend his hand through that that rainbow. And right about this time of year, I think there are some gatherings going on over there right now.
Are you familiar with the thinking of what the meaning of the rainbow? We know what dominant culture says, that it was a promise that was given not to rain upon the earth anymore in that same way. The answer is fairly common across the whole continent. American Indians saw it not as a promise that we as mere humans could never expect to extract from the Creator, you know, of all things. But it was more in the line, and the thinking is that the rainbow is a sign of the Creator's grace. Maybe that's saying the same thing, says the white dominant culture says. Maybe we're just saying it differently, you know. But it is a sign of the Creator's grace on earth. And it was good that all men should come and hold hands as friends, as brothers and sisters, under the rainbow. And so that is what we did. We came here and we gathered under the rainbow as to accept and to love and to thank the Creator for the amazing grace that is given to us while on this earth. So our thinking is a little bit different about the rainbow.
Reminds me of a song by Hoyt Axton called Way Before the Time of Towns. And for this interview, I'm going to put up a special page, and when people come and they're going to read about Monataka,
yes,
I'll play this song.
Ooh.
It's Hoyt Axton was the fellow that wrote Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog.
Yes.
But his mother wrote Heartbreak Hotel for Elvis. But Hoyt is a Cherokee descendant and wrote a lot of songs, and he's kind of, his song Revelations is kind of the theme song for the website. And but this other song, Way Before the Time of Towns, talks about the rainbow sign. Early morn for all mankind. And I think you're going to love it. I think the people will too.
yes. The most, you know, music is the food for the soul. That's what music is. Music tells many stories, but it strikes a resonance. It strikes a vibration within us that our hearts automatically open up. You know, it's like a flower come that when the sun comes. Music begins and our hearts become open.
Well, you know, you and I and Ghost of, sorry to interrupt, but you and I and Ghost Wolf have a lot in common. We all have a musical background. I was really surprised to find out. Well, see, in my junior year of high school, 1970-71, a group called Up With People came through town. And Up With People was they had at that point four or five casts of 150 individuals each in the cast. And they had been traveling around the world since 1965 as goodwill ambassadors. They were kind of a reaction against hippie nonconformity, but they had the same message. They were clean-cut kids that went out and told the same message that the hippie movement was spreading about peace and brotherhood.
Yes.
And but anyway, so the same time that I was in Europe, I went to Europe twice that my senior year of high school, traveling up with people, sang with them, was a soloist, and it's really interesting. You know, back then I didn't identify myself as an Indian, but the song that I sang
was Go My Son, which was written by a Navajo girl, and we had several full-blood Indian young people in the group. We had a Menominee, two Apaches, a Cherokee, a couple more, and one of those young ladies grew up, and she is the tribal chairman for the Jicarí Apache tribe right now, Claudia V. Hill Muñiz.
Oh yes.
And I graduated from high school. She was in my high school graduating class up with people high school, only traveling high school in history. But then as I was getting to know Ghost Wolf, I told him I was in Europe in 72, and he says, so was I. And I said, really, where were you? He says, oh, I was on this island. He gave me the name of it, you know, and I said, well, where is that? He says, in Greece. And I said, what were you doing there? He says, he was playing blues guitar. And he says, that's the island that Club Med was. So he's had a really interesting, we both lived on Long Island. See, my dad was he was a NASA scientist, and I grew up mostly in California, and in the 60s and 70s, and actually we left in the 60s and moved to Florida, then to New York, and that's where Ghost Wolf was from. So we both live within a few miles of each other, you know, near Northport, New York, and but he was a very, very talented sculptor, and had a he had already had he was so talented they had scholarships lined up for him, I believe, in Europe, as I recall. But anyway, one day he made some kind of an error and left a bubble or something, and put something in a kiln, and it exploded. And when that happened, his teacher literally exploded at him, and when his teacher exploded, Robert exploded. And you know, there was legal problems over that, and that's a lot of stuff that started the rumors, you know, about him, and really interesting. So he just he did what you did. He started hitchhiking, you know. He went and contacted the Hopi and Lakota elders back in the 60s. You know, that was about the time they were landing on the moon. You know, so we're talking 69, about the same time, I guess, you were probably coming back from Vietnam. And but we're all musicians are acquainted with music, and I know we've had Bunny Singswolf on as a guest. She receives all her songs through spirit at night, and Joanne Shenandoah and her husband Doug George, Cunningtio, is promised to come on the show. So it's interesting. We're getting to be a pretty musical family.
Yes. And here you have the producer.
That's fascinating. I played music professionally 75 and 6. I backed up a Grand Ole Opry member who'd been an artist and repertoire A&R man for a recording studio in Nashville, and moved back to the West Coast, where he was from, San Jose, and was trying to put a band together, and it wasn't what Creator wanted.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
possessions.